Here's a little throwback for you, all the way from the 80s.
2SER is part of Australia's alternative radio network, broadcasting diverse and informative programs throughout Sydney 24 hours a day. Keep it alive and subscribe.
We were still preaching all the same things we love about 2SER, just like we are today. To become a supporter in 2019, head to 2ser.com/support and help us celebrate the last 40 years. And here's to another 40.
Hi, Brian Wise from Off The Record here. If you enjoy our weekly music and interviews, you can help keep this program on air in Sydney on 2SER 107.3 by signing up as a station supporter. Subscribe right now and you'll go in the draw to win a double pass to Blues Fest 2020. That's 3 days on site with a camping space thrown in too. To get yourself in the draw, go to 2ser.com/support, sign up now, and don't forget to mention that you listen to Off The Record. And I thank you for your support of 2SER.
Hey, this is Gillian Welch.
And this is Dave Rollins.
And you're listening to Off The Record.
Thank you very much for joining me on the program this week, where I have a couple of special guests for you. First, I'm going to be talking to Lucy Thorne, Melbourne-based singer-songwriter, although she recorded her latest album, Kitty and Frank, in Sydney, and she'll be talking about that album. It's terrific. She's going on a national tour, and I'll give you some of those dates after the interview. And later in the program, I'll play for you part one of our interview with Jeff Tweedy from Wilco, talking about Wilco's latest album. But first to Lucy Thorne, who's recently released her most impressive album today. As I mentioned, it's called Kitty and Frank. It's a concept album. It's based on the story of Frank Gardner, the bushranger, and his partner. Let's hear a track from the album called Golden Plains, and then we'll have a talk to Lucy Thorne about the album and play a couple more selections from it.
Fire.
blood and planes. I climb up through the granite and boulders and watch them come in droves now. Every day they say this world is more, I know it.
Golden Plains from Lucy Thorne's album, Kitty and Frank. And Lucy joins me in the studio right now. Thanks for coming in, Lucy.
My pleasure, Brian. We're just at the very start of our national album launch tour.
Well, it is a terrific album, the album Kitty and Frank. Can you tell us about the story behind the album? Because it is somewhat of a concept album, so to speak, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. As surprising as that is to myself as much as anyone else. So Kitty and Frank were real live people. Kitty is Kitty Walsh, and she was a young frontier woman who lived with her family along the Lachlan River in central western New South Wales in the mid-1800s. Frank is Frank Gardner, who by all accounts was a very charming, handsome and successful outlaw and bushranger. So I first heard about Kitty and Frank from a fella by the name of Craig Lawler, who runs a thing called Blind Freddy's Bushranger Tours out in Canoundra. And it's a long story, but the short version of it is that I, after hearing these wild, crazy true tales of the bushranging activity of that era, in that time, in that place, and the wild romance between Kitty and Frank, I was totally captivated. So I kind of knew there and then I was going to write a song for these two lovers. Kitty was a young married woman, but with the gold rush, in comes Frank. They fall madly in love. They run away together. They do not live happily ever after. So it's a tragic tale. It's got everything. It's got romance, adventure, loss, tragedy. Yeah, I started out by writing one song for them and then I sort of quite quickly wrote another one. And then, I don't know, fast forward a couple of years and their story was still rattling around in the back of my brain and I thought, maybe I need to actually dive into this a bit more. And the next thing you know, I wrote a whole lot of records worth of songs for them. So, yeah.
So when you say it didn't have a happy ending, what happened to them? Were they Australia's version of Bonnie and Clyde or something?
Well,
about 100 years earlier.
It's so hard to kind of, you know, distill this story into a short version, but I'll give it a shot. So they, after an especially lucrative roadside robbery, they run away together. They make it all the way to Appers Creek, just outside of Rockhampton in Queensland, where they sort of start again. They sort of start a fresh life living a kind of straight life for the first time for Frank, and they set up a general supply store. So they're selling grog and mining supplies to the hopeful folk heading out to the diggings and peak downs. And so that lasts nearly a year and a half, and then Frankie's recognised by a Southern copper and gets... I mean, he'd been in and out of jail many times during his career as an outlaw, but he gets busted this time and gets sentenced to 32 years in jail in Darlinghurst, which, you know, effectively a life sentence. So he gets shipped off to Sydney. Kitty follows him to Sydney. Kitty, tragically, she's granted one visit, but she's not allowed to visit him because in the eyes of the law, she is considered another man's wife still. And so he's in Darlinghurst jail. Kitty ends up dying a terribly tragic death in New Zealand on the goldfields there. And I'll spare you the details of that over the air, but it's all on the record if you want to dive into some tragedy, folks. But Frank is actually released after 10 years, mostly thanks to his tough and determined sisters who just continuously petitioned on his behalf. So he gets released on condition of exile. Via Hong Kong, he ends up in San Francisco, where he lives out his days being the bar manager and owner of a joint called the Twilight Star Saloon, no less. Although there are some other stories that I really like. I'm not sure if they're true, but I think he was also recognised continuing his bushranging activities, holding up Mormons on the road to Utah. So, yeah.
I'm surprised there hasn't been a movie about it. Maybe there has. Has there?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, in his day, he was a super famous dude, and I'm sure there's lots of people listening who know plenty about Frank. One of the members of his gang was a fellow by the name of Ben Hall, who has certainly gone on to have quite a name for himself, although it's a little warped, perhaps. But, so there's lots written about Frank, and there is almost nothing written about Kitty. One of Kitty's sisters was married to Ben Hall, actually, for a while. There's nothing written about any of them, really, any of her sisters, or indeed many of the women at the time in general. So part of my motivation for this whole project was to, the more I sort of found out about it, the story, and the less I could find out about Kitty, I was like, you know, I think I really was drawn to tell these stories from her perspective and to sort of flip that historical lens and try and give some human context to, you know, the experience of women in the time.
It's a fascinating story, and having written the songs, you've gone in to the studio. It's quite different to anything you've ever done before.
Mm-hmm.
You're not only playing guitar, you're playing synthesizer.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you've got a terrific little band. You recorded it in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about the recording of it and the musical scope, because, as I said, it's very different to anything you've done before.
Yeah, it is. And, that's... partly because I wrote the songs in a very different way. I've always written songs with a guitar in my arms, but in April last year I set myself off on a little songwriting retreat to a shack on the Haukai River up in northeastern Vic. And, you know, obviously I took a guitar with me, but I also borrowed a friend's MIDI keyboard, and which I'd never used before. And I mean, I've dabbled on a little bit of keyboards over the years, but sitting down to write, you know, suddenly I found myself writing these sort of synth riffs and melodies, and there was something really freeing about that for me, I guess because I hadn't done it before, and it just sort of threw a whole lot of my go-to songwriterly things out the window. And I was very focused on, obviously the story I wanted to tell was front centre, and I knew that I was trying to weave this, you know, chronological tale of these two characters. But, yeah, it wasn't clear to me what musical setting that was going to take. So anyway, I wrote these synth songs, and the whole while I was very much thinking of and imagining what my amazing dream team band would bring to the party. So Hamish Stewart, who I mentioned before, on drums, the wonderful Dave Symes on bass, and the one and only Chris Abrahams on piano and keyboards. So I sent those fellas my sketches and a bit of a rave, and I think we had one get together before we got into the studio, you know, a few weeks prior, where we just sort of fleshed out some of the ideas, and I had a really strong feeling that they were gonna hear what I was trying to do and sort of fly with it, which they sure did. So yeah, we tracked most of the record live to tape with a great engineer by the name of Simon Berkelman up in Sydney at Golden Retriever Studios in Marrickville. And then I took those sessions home and continue to kind of muck around with them and do, you know, layer up bits and pieces. And then we mixed it here at the start of the year with John Lee, who was also incredible to work with. Yeah, here in Melbourne town, and now it's out in the world.
Well, as I mentioned, it's very different to anything you've done before. So let's play an example of that. It's
sure.
a song called All the Love, and I'll come back and talk to you about the instrumentation on this particular track after we have a listen to it.
Great.
Staring at across the yard, our genitals and night burst dark. Me and Frankie got the stars to guide. Pretty soon we're gonna run, not hide. We'll hit, we'll hit. Oh, we gotta hit, we gotta hit. Running rivers got the hill on top of. We hit, we hit. Oh, we wanna hit, oh, we wanna hit. Me and Frankie, we got all the love. Careful, we'll time it right. Next stop, moon in the dead of night. Me and my baby and the guiding stars. It's now or never, I've come this far.
From Lucy Thorne and her album Kitty and Frank. And Lucy's with me in the studio. We just heard the song, as I mentioned, All the Love, which has got some really interesting keyboard parts. Can you tell us about that? Really inventive. And I should have mentioned beforehand to listen to it really loud, because I think that best gives some of the things in the trip, exemplify some of the things in the song. But tell us about the instrumentation. Who came up with all those little ideas?
Yeah, well, that's me doing all the kooky little key parts there. And I don't know, maybe there's a lot to be said for the fact that it's, you know, not my primary instrument, and that I have had this sort of very free relationship with the keyboard. So we tracked it all. You know, the rest of the track just sort of live to tape with the fellas, and I brought it home, and I was like, oh, I really want it to sort of bounce along in this, you know, I want to give it another layer of lightness. And so I just, you know, I did think there's a few songs, and this is one of them on the record, where I wondered if I should maybe outsource, you know, like give it back to Chris Abrams to do another layer or whatever. And then I thought, you know what? I can actually really hear quite clearly in my funny little musical brain what I want to hear. So I better have a crack at doing it first. And yeah, and I did. Mm. So, but that song, that's actually the second song I wrote for Kitty and Frank. And I wrote it on the guitar, and I sort of, I played it out a few times, but I knew it's sort of in its old guitar incarnation. It always bugged me a little bit. And I was like, you know, I love the melody, I love the story. I know this has got legs as a song, but I was never convinced that that was going to be its sonic world. So, you know, then as the other synth songs started to come in, I was like, ah, okay, I know what we're going to do here, folks.
Mm. Yeah. Very inventive.
Thank you.
Mm. There's a couple of other songs a little bit like that as well, and as I said, it's a very interesting sort of musical setting for the songs compared to what you've done before. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you're going to continue? What do you think, or is it?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, it's always hard to say what you're going to do next, because I don't know about anyone else, but I never really know until I'm in the middle of it. And you know, with this, I mean, it's not like I sort of set out to make a certain kind of record. And in fact, with the whole of Kitty and Frank, I mean, it does actually cover quite a lot of sonic ground. You know, there's some stuff that's sort of less popish and more art music, or, you know, I don't know. I've never been very good with genres, but, you know, there are some acoustic instruments as well on this record. But I guess for me it's about, I mean, as vague as it sounds, it's, and as hard as it is to describe, there's, you know, something about just following the music. Like once you get a taste for it, you kind of, that's the feeling I get anyway when I'm in that creative process. It's like, well, you know, it feels like I'm following something rather than kind of, does that make any sense? Anyway, who knows what I'm going to do next, but I certainly have a taste for this set of sounds. And I should also say too, like on this tour, right, we're playing the whole record front to back. And so, you know, obviously I wrote a whole bunch of the songs on the keyboard. I played a whole lot of the keyboards on the album. But this tour is the first time that I've then, like, stood up and played keys in front of people, which I'm having so much fun with. And it's sort of, it feels slightly risky or something, you know, because it's all new. But I think there's a lot to be said for that, you know, being a bit on the edge.
Hey, I'm writing the lyrics for this concept, mm-hmm. I guess telling a story across an album, did that give you a focus? Did it make it, I'm not saying easier, but was it give you more focus and sort of an aim at the end of the project type thing, rather than sort of sitting down and trying to come up with a bunch of songs for an album?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was interesting in that way, because I think I mentioned before I wrote the first song pretty much straight after hearing the story about them, and I wrote All the Love quite soon thereafter, and then I didn't write anything for ages. So I went through a bit of a lull generally, and I didn't write any songs, let alone any Kitty and Frank songs for a while. But you know, I've been doing this long enough for that not to have freaked me out. And I was like, I know it's going to, you know, it's just part of the cycle. And so I guess somewhere my creative brain just needed to have a bit of a cogitate. But, yeah, their story was so, it just sort of didn't leave me alone, you know, like it kind of kept just knocking on the back door of my creative brain. So, and then I think with that trip to Hawkeye, like I was very aware that I suddenly had that feeling where I was like, okay, I've got a whole bunch of songs in me. I've got to give them the space to actually, because, you know, there's always a million distractions, right? So I was like, I have to really dedicate some time to, you know, actually writing the material. And, I mean, over the years I've written, you know, a bunch of songs that are clearly from someone else's perspective, or, you know, have a very strong sense of character or narrative. But I've certainly never had, you know, put together a whole body of work like that. So, yeah, in some ways it was that sense of following the music was really clear. It sort of just sort of rolled out. Like I knew the sort of peaks of the story that I really wanted to be in there. You know, there are several historical sort of facts and events that kind of pop up through the songs. But also, of course, you know, I like to think of it as a historical fiction because I've made heaps of stuff up, of course, partly because, you know, there's so little recorded history about Kitty or any of the women of the time. So it's like, well, I got to use my poetic license on that one.
Yeah. Did you go back to the newspapers at the time and have a look and see if there was anything about Kitty in there?
Yeah, and I did. But I must say, I did leave Craig Lawler, who, you know, of Blind Freddy's Bushranger fame and many other claims to fame, I should add, you know, his chief sleuth, and he's a full-blown bushranger nerd. So it's like, why reinvent the wheel? You know, so Craig, as I sort of, I mean, I sent the demos of, you know, the early songs to Craig, and I think he, you know, he quickly clocked that I was really running with this idea. And so as it became clearer that I was going to make a whole album, he supplied me with all sorts of amazing juicy details and sort of parallel and peripheral stories around the edges of it all. And so, yeah, he's the chief sleuth.
Well, people can hear the whole story in its entirety, or all the story that's on your album, Kitty and Frank, and congratulations. It's a terrific album.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks for coming in. Shall we finish off with Barbary Coast? Do you want to tell us about Barbary Coast?
Sure. Okay, so this is the second last song on the album, and it's from Frank's perspective. Kitty is long gone by this stage. He's out of jail. He's clearly in San Francisco, in fact, the Barbary Coast area thereof. And, you know, I don't know whether he was still daydreaming about Kitty at the end of his life, but the romantic in me has decided that he definitely was. So here we are.
Well, let's hope that some filmmaker is inspired to make a film and use your music as a soundtrack.
That's a great
That'd
idea.
That'd be nice, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, give us a call, filmmaker.
Thanks, Lucy.
Good on you. Thank you.
song called Barbary Coast from Lucy Thorne's album, Kitty and Frank. Terrific album, isn't it? We were talking to Lucy about the album, the other tracks we heard, All the Love and Golden Plains. Lucy launched the album on Sunday, October the 6th in Melbourne at the Northcote Social Club, but she's going on tour. She'll be in New South Wales from Thursday the 17th of October at the Camelot Lounge. Then she's going to Yarralla on Friday the 18th at McCrossan's Mill. Saturday the 19th at the Community Arts Hall in Wauchope. Then on Sunday the 20th in Maitland, along with Hamish Stewart and Alice Williams, I might add, who are accompanying her in the New South Wales leg of the tour. In Queensland, she'll be at the Junk Bar in Brisbane on Thursday the 14th of November. Back in New South Wales at Mullumbimby Music Festival on the 15th of November. Then in South Australia from the 22nd of November through to the 24th. So if you want to check out the dates, you can see them on her website, lucythorne.com. You're listening to Off the Record with Brian Weiss. Thanks for joining me this week. Let's continue the program with Jeff Tweedy. He is the leader and lead singer of the band Wilco. They've just released their 11th studio album. It's called Ode to Joy, and I caught up the other week with Jeff Tweedy to talk about the album. This week, part one of our interview talking about Wilco's album, Ode to Joy. We'll hear a little bit of background and we'll get stuck into the album. And next week on the program, Jeff will talk not only about the album, but also about his tremendous memoir that was published earlier this year. Jeff Tweedy from Wilco. Good to catch up with you.
Yeah.
Are you at the loft at the moment?
No, I'm home, and we're just hanging out with the last few days of summer before Sammy goes back to college. So we're getting ready to go out to eat or something.
There's been quite a few Australians who've recorded at the loft, hasn't there?
Yeah, it's a home away from home.
Is that how you set it up to be?
I like to think of it as a comfortable place for people to live and create. It just happened to be kind of a coincidence, I suppose, that Tom Schick has worked on a lot of records by Australians while I've been on the road. And I guess word has gotten around to other Australians that it's a comfortable place. So he keeps getting pitched projects that are from down under.
Yeah, well, it's got a particular sound there, hasn't it? It's a pretty warm sound.
I mean, we don't try and impose our sonic aesthetics on anybody, but there is, I think that there's a depth to the recording that Tom does that is really, really professional. I don't know what else to call it. I mean, it's like he really knows what he's doing, unlike a lot of people recording bands these days. You know, he really studied under one of the guys that invented a lot of the way modern recording is done, and Walter Sear. And so I think that when he puts a microphone in front of somebody, it's going to sound exactly like what they're doing. And for some bands that creates a really documentary warm type of realistic recording. And for other people, it might be a little unnerving.
A lot of bands, or indie bands these days, try to do without a producer, don't they? They do it by themselves, and it just never seems to work. You know, for a little bit of extra funding, you can get a much better result if you use a few people who actually know what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't blame them. I mean, it's expensive. It definitely is hard. I mean, but at the same time, it's democratized compared to when I was growing up. You know, you had no access to any type of recording equipment when I was starting out. And the first, I guess, home tape recording four tracks were kind of when I was younger starting out. But as far as like a real studio and the way people are able to basically make a whole record on their laptop these days, that was a distant fantasy. But I do think there is, I don't know, producers are a little bit overrated sometimes. I think that you should force yourself to make the right call and not defer big decisions to someone else about your own music. I think that I don't advocate for that. But having somebody that you trust to make help you make less decisions is invaluable.
Could be an engineer too. You know, if you've got a really good engineer, that can really help a recording, can't it?
Well, that's my setup. You know, yeah. Tom is he co-produces, but he's primarily the engineer, and that's where his. I mean, I think he's a great producer too, but he's an amazing, just world-class engineer, and you know, you can't stump him. He knows how to get. He knows how to get every sound you want. Jeff Tweedy from Wilco, and you're listening to Off the Record.
Hey, can I just mention that one of my favorite ever Wilco gigs was in Texas almost 2 years ago. The band was in full flight and you seem to be really loving it. Is that the kind of feeling you brought into the studio for the new album, because you've had a bit of a break and you've done your solo albums? Is that how it felt getting back into the studio?
I don't know. This lineup of the band has been together for a lot longer than any other lineup of the band. And for about as long as I can remember, there's been a great deal of, I don't know, just gratitude on stage. It's a really good feeling, you know, that we have when we play together. And it's definitely been enhanced by taking a little bit of time away from each other. You know, it wasn't like we were sick of each other when we went on hiatus, but it was sort of like a delayed gratification, you know, like I knew it was going to feel great, and it did. And I do think that contributed to there being some new creative energy in the band for the recording. And I really feel like the shows coming up and the shows we've done already have already reached a new level.
Tell us about the title of the album, Ode to Joy, which is also the title of a classical piece of music as well, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a pretty famous piece of music, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, people write odes to a lot of things, and I guess it could go either way. On one hand, it could be, you know, a reminder to partake in that particular emotion, even though the world is falling apart at the seams. I think that what we're fighting for is for the ability people to experience joy and share joy and beauty. And at the same time, people write a lot of odes about things that are dead. So I felt like it worked in both directions. I think that there are some things that are mournful about the record. One of them is the sense that we are drowning in a constant state of what did that Huffer Lunker say today? You know, and it's disturbing. And not only that, you have the knowledge of real damage being done to a lot of marginalized communities in our country and around the world, frankly. So but mostly I just wanted to reclaim a certain amount of private, smaller emotions in the face of greater suffering or greater concern. You don't get to choose those. And I think it doesn't help anybody to feel bad about having a good day.
It's nice to have an ode to joy rather than an ode to despair, which could easily happen these days, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, there's probably something to be said for despair, too. I mean, a lot of things don't happen until people get desperate.
If you're telling yourself a story where the secrets twist like vines, bodies are buried, but you can't remember where you buried the mines. Oh, no one denies, everyone hides. Oh, oh, everyone hides. You sell yourself on a tale where the details drip with time, where the point gets
Jeff Tweedy from Wilco, and you're listening to Off the Record.
One of the most notable aspects of the music that hits you, basically from the start of the single, which we'll talk about in a moment, is Glenn's drumming. Is that was sort of deliberate? It's like that sound.
Yeah. I mean, we spent a great deal of time in the beginning of the project, kind of curating a drum sound that was like hyper real, or you know,
yeah.
It actually kind of required not thinking about the drums as a drum kit and more thinking of them as percussion, and in a lot of cases recording each individual drum separately and allowing them to have like a full range of frequencies instead of like a drum kit that you kind of squash down in the corner of the stereo field and try to make sound like someone else's record.
It certainly has an effect on the actual sound of the album overall, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it carries a lot of weight. I mean, and that's kind of the idea, is that the drumming is somewhat representative of some brutal monolith, you know, maybe the unspoken dread that we were talking about, you know, certain amount of marching going on, which could be, you know, the pervasive feeling of there being some authoritarianism being propagated.
Speaking of marching, I believe that Love Is Everywhere, Beware was written after the Women's March. Is that right? Can you talk about that song?
Yeah, I think the lyrics, I think the music was around and before the march, and then afterwards I wrote a lot of lyrics after the march because it was inspiring on one hand, and you know, it was revelatory about maybe in a way that I hadn't paid that much attention to before the election and the inauguration and our current, I don't know, avoidance of being politically engaged. You know, I think a lot of people in the United States really felt that once we elected a black president, all of the problems of the past had been solved, and that was very, very wrong. It required a certain amount of engagement that, on one hand, I feel like I can blame the Obama administration for maybe not leading enough in that regard and steering people towards more engagement. But at the same time, I don't know what you would have been able to do, because people really, you know, kind of brushed their hands off and said, well, that's solved, that's done. And a lot of people went to sleep, I think.
These days, it's almost like there's two Americas now. It seems to be, I don't know whether you find that touring and traveling around there.
I think that there are 6 to 12 Americas, maybe probably somewhere in the range of 9 Americas that don't have anything to do with state lines and aren't even contiguous. You know, I'm not going to bore you with my theory about what they all are, but I think that there's a, you know, an old Confederacy. I think that there's an urban population, and there are some stranger, you know, maybe old world farming types of Americas, but it's a big, big country. It's just gigantic, and it has a lot of easily exploited fissures and divisions that a lot of other countries don't have.
Tell you
From Wilco, and you're listening to Off the Record.
Love is Everywhere, Beware, from Wilco's album Ode to Joy. And we were talking to Jeff Tweedy from Wilco about the album in part one of our interview special. The other tracks we heard, Everyone Hides and 1.5 Stars. And we'll play part two of the interview for you on next week's program. And as I mentioned, where Jeff will talk about his terrific memoir. And if you haven't had a read of it, then may I thoroughly recommend it. Ask someone to give it to you for Christmas. It's a terrific read. And if you have any interest in Wilco, I'm sure you'll be fascinated by it. Hey, thanks for joining me this week on the program. I hope you've enjoyed our interviews with Lucy Thorne and Jeff Tweedy. I'm going to leave you with a track from an album that is a classic. It's about to celebrate its 45th birthday. It is called No Other by Gene Clark, and it's been re-released. It's being re-released as a deluxe box set. It's also been remastered, and I've had a listen to a couple of tracks that have been released from it so far, and they sound absolutely fantastic, and I'm going to play one to go out on the show this week, and I'll tell you more about the album in coming weeks, particularly when I get hold of the box set. This is From a Silver File, from Gene Clark's album No Other, released in October 1974. Thanks for joining me on Off the Record, brought to you on the satellite network of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia and supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. I'll talk to you next week.
from a silver vial. Took her magic master's words and sung and made his lower self worthwhile. Sleeping in the master's room, seeing through his eyes.
Hi, I'm Brian Wise and you're listening to Off the Record on 2SER 107.3. This month, I'm asking you to show your support for 2SER and Off the Record by making a contribution to 2SER's supporter drive. Like all community radio stations, 2SER is not-for-profit and relies on the support of listeners to stay on air. Go online now to 2SER.com/support to make a contribution. We thank you for your support.
Guys.